Hi, Godfrey. Good morning. Can you hear me?
God, this is really weird.
Hello, Godfrey.
Really strange. Ah, I wonder what's going on.
Can you hear me, Godfrey?
Can you hear me, Jeff?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I'll just check my speakers with iTunes. Okay.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you beautifully.
Ah, so it was a speaker issue.
It was.
All right. Well, that's at this hour of the morning on Saturday, I understand.
Yeah.
How are you doing this morning?
Good. Actually, we ended up being right on time also, which is pretty good.
All right. Well, listen, I'd like to start off and introduce you and your website and just so that the audience knows, you know, who you are. I typically get thousands of people who listen to my program. So you'll get a lot of exposure, and I think you deserve it. And I think they deserve it too. And then I would just like to explain how I kind of met you and and which is through all of your brilliant repartee with the people on Diplomacy and some other websites, and then I'll just mention that I was going through your website and I saw this wonderful article about Shanghai, and I just thought that, you know, since education is such a huge topic around the world, that it was definitely worth a chance for you to explain what's going on in Shanghai. And that we don't have to, but if we have time, I mean, I try to keep these down to, you know, about a half an hour max, because otherwise people start, the listenership goes way down if it's longer than 30 minutes, because people just don't want to listen that long. So if we have time at that point, you know, we can talk about that ridiculous Wall Street article. And so anyway, are you ready to get started?
I'm ready. I have the Wall Street article in front of me. So do you want to refer to that? Oh, you want to save that to the end? Or
Yeah. Let's just save it at the end if we've got some time left over. And I'll keep an eye on the time. And again, like I say, you know, 30, 35 minutes. If it goes 45, you know, 50 minutes, people start, you know, fewer people will click on it because they don't want to listen to something that long. So let's try to keep it down to about a half an hour. And although I could probably talk to you for, you know, an hour and a half. But anyway, are you ready to go ahead and get started?
I'm ready.
Let me take a sip of Chinese tea here for my throat.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Good morning, everybody. This is Jeff J. Brown in Beijing, China for China Rising Radio Sinoland. It is Saturday, May 7th, 2016, and I am very honored to have on the phone today, on the show today, Mr. Godfrey Roberts, who hails from Chiang Mai, Thailand. Good morning, Godfrey. How are you doing?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm very well, thank you.
And before we get into our program today, which is about education, which should interest just about anybody that has gone through high school and college or has children, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into following China. I would like to immediately come out and say everybody that's listening to this program today should check out your website, www.inpraiseofchina.com, and I will put that on the in the article today on my website, as well as referencing the article that we're going to talk about. But tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, on my way from living in Japan in the 1960s to studying in the United States, I traveled through China in 1967.
Wow.
And it took quite a bit of doing to get there. And I was struck by the difference between the stories I'd read in our media about China and the Chinese I met and their attitude to what was going on and, you know, the whole scene. It was a fascinating difference between the media account and what I was seeing and hearing. So I began to, you know, study it. I was interested. Why was there such a big difference? And I then went on to do my doctorate at UMass in Amherst.
Wow.
In education, experimental education of all things.
Wow.
So needless to say, when Shanghai started to surface in 2009, when they came to the attention of professional educators, I jumped on it. I was just absolutely fascinated. And that's why I've stayed on the Shanghai story since then.
And can you tell us a little about have you been a teacher in your life? How did you? I can see by your photo we may be from about the same generation. So I assume you maybe you're retired and are now. But what did you do in your younger life?
I was started out as a teacher, became principal, and then a school superintendent. And did superintendency gigs all over the world, including Fiji and so on. Had a great time and ended up in Thailand because I was interested in their culture. But from Thailand is an excellent place to study China because a third of the population are Chinese or Chinese related, and they're very positively related, and I have lots of Chinese friends here. So I get the gossip as well as the straight stuff. and they can mouth off about the government as much as they like here in Thailand. and we can laugh about their the problems at home.
It sounds like you, from your accent, that you're from the Antipodes. Are you from Australia or New Zealand?
Yes, I was born in Australia. Left there in my 20s and go back every Christmas to spend it with my huge Australian family.
Well, let me tell the China Rising fans out there how I met you. I don't know how I got it, but I know what it was. John Rachel, an author friend of mine who lives in Japan, sent me a link about an article about China, and through Discus, you know, the comment thing of where you can follow people's comments, and you had a comment on there, and I was going, wow, that guy really makes a lot of sense. And of course, you know, I write about China and have for a number of years. And so I started following you. I clicked on you and started following you. So for the last year, I get these emails with your comments, like on diplomacy. I can't think of all the other articles. all the other websites that you comment, but you're like a relentless onslaught against ignorance with all these comments that you leave on these websites. You know, people just, you know, spouting off the most ridiculous, you know, propaganda, and you just bombard them with facts and figures and statistics and anecdotal experience, and it's just a joy to read your comments. And then I was so fascinated. I said, I want to interview this guy, and so I started looking for you, and then I found your website. I only found out it about, I don't know, maybe a month ago. And so then I started going through your website. I was going, God, this guy's like a treasure trove of information on China. He and I are like soulmates. And so and then I asked my editor, my publishing company, Punto, if they could find you. And then I finally found your email somewhere. If anybody wants to follow Godfrey on Discus, D-I-C, I think it's, what is it, Discus, C-U-S, yeah, D-I-C-C-U-S, the comment software on blogs. He's a treasure trove of repartee with China haters. So now that we've got the introductions out of the way, please tell us about, you know, I was slack-jawed too when I saw this article on your website about the Shanghai education system. Can you just walk us through it, about the PISA test, the Program for International Student Assessment, and how Shanghai has done, and why they are leaps and bounds ahead of Europe and the West?
Sure. Well, the summary of it, and the reason I wrote about it, is that finally a study was completed on the Shanghai school system by a professor from Singapore and Charlene Tan. It's a wonderful book. You can get it, a free copy, you know, read it free for a week on Amazon. It's called Learning from Shanghai. It essentially documents Shanghai's determination 20 years ago to completely review and revise everything about the educational process in that city and county. And what they've done is broken down the conventional classroom education into its smallest component parts, beginning with parental relationships and so forth, and done it right. And I would the highlights of it are this. The teachers accept responsibility for the children's learning completely. No child is blamed for not learning. The only blame goes to the teacher. As you can imagine, this has resulted in every child doing well compared to our system. There are no failures. They don't move on if a kid is not getting it. And they've got every way possible to get their point across. You know, they'll sing it, they'll dance it, they'll act it out, they'll whatever. But the reversal of responsibility for 100% of the children is probably the biggest change in the way they've approached education. Now, on top of that, the teachers are highly professional. They're only allowed to teach no more than 15 hours a week in the classroom. Rest of the time, they need to be doing research, meeting with others, particularly meeting with teachers who've been sitting in on their classes. That happens pretty much every week to every teacher. There's an experienced supervisor, a teacher, or just a colleague sitting in, taking notes, and they might spend an hour or two after class going over it, further refining it, further breaking it down, talking about the little boy at the back of the class who just didn't seem to be getting it. You know, what was his stumbling block? That's a normal teacher's teaching load. So just 3 hours a day max of instruction. And a little clue I got about the status and the importance that the city puts on education: they provide every one of their school principals with a chauffeur-driven limousine.
status.
Yes, exactly. Nothing speaks louder. You know, we talk about how the debt we owe to our educators and the selflessness of our teachers. And meanwhile, we reduce their salaries and, you know, cut their pension funds and so on. The Chinese give their school principals limos.
Well, not only that, but, you know, in the West, you know, attacking the teachers in the media for, you know, failing the students and failing society. There's just this diatribe of you know, venomous, you know, propaganda against teachers, you know, to make them the bullseye for everything that ails, not just the schools, but society as a whole.
Exactly. Just, you know, this is, as you probably mentioned on your program, this is an attack on government. Teachers are an arm of government.
Yeah, of course.
And it's just one of the ways of delegitimizing government. And, of course, that carries all the way through to delegitimizing the government of China, because government is the enemy of wealthy oligarchs, as we know.
Yeah.
And it has always been, you know, for hundreds of years. The barons in, you know, England were against government.
Yeah.
So anyway, you've got the general picture of people who really value this. And then behind it all, of course, are the tiger mothers, the parents of these kids who are relentless in their desire that the children do well and 100% cooperative with the teachers. So to give your readers an idea of how superior Shanghai is, it's so far in advance of any other school system in the world, and by the way, there are 26 million people in Shanghai, so far ahead, that the next contenders are, you know, almost invisible. It's vastly better. Its results, well, we talked about this before. They are graduating kids at 17 who have the equivalent of a BA from an average Midwestern college in the United States.
Yeah, I just want. I am only referring to your article. I did not get the Learning from China book, but you know, the OECD, the Organization for Economic, what is it, Cooperation and Development, basically the rich countries of the world. The mean score for PISA in 2012 was 494, and Shanghai was 613. For science and 570 for reading and 580 for science and math, reading and science. I mean, they're just, you know, way ahead of, you know, we're talking, you know, Shanghai, Singapore, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Korea, Japan, you know, Switzerland, the Netherlands, you know, France, which is my second nationality. You know, New Zealand and then, you know, country, you know, the UK and then countries like Australia. Australia is on there, but it's way down. And then, you know, the USA doesn't even rank. I don't know what happened to the USA. I guess it's too low.
You'll be pleased to hear, Jeff, we beat Mexico. Literally, we're number 33 and they're number 34.
You know, Godfrey, it's amazing that you brought up that 3 hours a day, because for two magical years, I taught at an international school here in Beijing, teaching upper elementary kids, and they were going through a transition, and I was only it was nonprofit, which, of course, you know, says a lot, because now I'm working for a for-profit school, and I think the dynamics are like, you know, a nightmare and a dream. But I was teaching a half a day. I was teaching 3 hours a day, and it was the three best years of teaching, and the most effective, powerful, impactful teaching that I ever had. And I had a TA. I had a Chinese TA, teaching assistant, and we we had about 20 students, and we had time, you know, to go through their papers and work with them on their papers and, you know, mark their papers. And we had time for them to go back and make their corrections. And we had time, you know, to really, understand what each child needed in terms of their individual needs. And we could target, you know, like, well, this child is struggling, you know, with verbs, or this child is struggling with, you know, vocabulary, you know. And then the school changed, it became privatized, and then all of a sudden we had, you know, like 6 hours of instruction a day. And then they started taking away, you know, meeting times, et cetera. And now I'm at a private high school, and it's even worse. And we have to substitute for all the 6 teachers, and we have to we have 1 45-minute, you know, meeting a week with our department, and 1 45-minute a week of professional development, and that's it. And, you know, I'm not teaching. I'm just, you know, the kids pay and they, you know, the kids pay and they pass, you know, the parents cut them a check, and they keep moving up and keep moving up, and they're not reading and they're not writing, and, mm-hmm. And they're not speaking and they're not yep. comprehending, and they keep moving up, and yep. it's a ticking time bomb, in international schools here, and, you know, in China, for wealthy families who, you know, and there are private schools popping up everywhere. There's hundreds of them now, and it's going to be a disaster in 15 years.
Jeff, I can't help but drag in that Wall Street Journal article because the kids, your kids, are the ones who are going to college in the United States.
Yeah. These parents are. Yeah, you know, I feel sorry for them, and I feel sorry for the students, you know, because I really, you know, we really don't have time to, you know, to take care of their needs, and they know that they are going to move up to the next grade no matter what, and you're right, and these parents, well-intentioned, they love their kids, they yep. you know, they're passionate about them, and but they think that they're really getting a great education, and they're not. And they're paying, you know, 200,000 RMB a year for it. Mm-hmm. And they think that they're all going to go to Stanford and MIT and the Ivy League schools. And it's just ludicrous. So I just, when you mentioned that 15 hours a week, it was like, oh, I did that for 2 years. Yeah. And I was the best teacher in the world because I had time to get to know my students, go back and fix, you know, find all what they needed to fix, work with them on an individual basis, you know, make them go back and fix their mistakes. And I tell you, my kids, they improve by leaps and bounds. It was just unreal. So that obviously is one of the secrets of Shanghai, is that the teachers have time to do what I call back office work, which is, you know, talk and meet and you know, mark the kids' papers, instead of spending, you know, 1 minute on a piece of on an English lesson, you know, spending, you know, 10 or 15 minutes on a lesson and really going through it and marking every I and crossing every T and, you know, everything else. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you put your finger on it. It's the difference between talk and action. And we're very strong on talk. We're very supportive of our education ideas, but we're weak on action. We've allowed our school staff to be abused for years now in the States. And as you said, 20 years from now, we're going to wake up, and it'll be way too late. There'll be no possibility of closing the gap at that point. Because every school principal and every guy like you and me is in Shanghai now with a notepad in the back of a classroom somewhere, How do they do this? they have staff meeting. Good. And they're all going back to their provinces, back to their second and third and fourth tier cities, and they're doing this. They're going in, they're saying, teachers, put your feet up. 3 hours a day from now on, principals, we're going to somehow find the money to get you a damn chauffeured limo, because that's what they're
Symbols are important.
You betcha, man. When he arrives home the first night in that shiny new car and the uniformed driver jumps out.
And opens his door with flair. Yes.
And his neighbors, oh God, they think, holy shit. And then after a while, the culture, they open the door and the kid says, who's that, mom? And she says, oh, he must be a school principal. In a very hushed tone, of course.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they've got in Shanghai. That's actually what's going on.
Well, that's amazing. Well, you know, with what these I saw an article in The Economist. I don't subscribe to it. I get their email teaser to try to get me to subscribe. But there was an article about private schools in China, and this was about 6 months ago, and they had already counted 734, you know, private schools. And these are not universities. These are like, you know, K through kindergarten through 12, and it's exploding exponentially. And they're you know, and the Chinese are very wealthy. There's a lot of wealthy Chinese, and they want that status, you know, that patina of, you know, well, my child goes to an international, you know, school or a bilingual school and is learning English, and there are some very good ones, you know, but most of them are nonprofit, and I'm not going to name names, but most of them are nonprofit, and then there's, you know, there's a lot of money sloshing around in China, and people are looking for investments, and they've invested in real estate, and they've invested in the stock market, and they've invested in gold, and now they're starting to invest in schools. And they, of course, are expecting, you know, returns on their investment, you know, like, ooh, you know, like, you know, houses and, mm-hmm, and et cetera. And unfortunately, you know, if you want to be an investor in a school, you have to accept, you know, years where there's capital investment and where there's no profit. You have to accept years where, and even then, you have to accept, you know, low single digit returns, and that's not happening. And so these private schools are charging a fortune, and many of the students are just not getting it. And now what you're telling me is that schools around China are replicating the Shanghai model, and these are public, you know, grade schools and middle schools and high schools. So that's good. Maybe some of these wealthy parents of my children will start going back to, you know, Chinese schools, which already there are really some excellent Chinese schools here in Beijing. And I keep scratching my head, you know, why don't they go to school there? And because even in public schools today in Beijing, high school 12th graders, they're graduating. They speak really good English. The English programs are already very strong in Chinese public schools.
Yes, they're very impressive.
So I just find it just, you know, this unfortunate, you know, chasing status, you know, that, well, my child goes to an international school, you know, ha ha ha. And but yet, you know, down the street, you know, there's, you know, school number, you know, whatever, you know, 56 or whatever, that doesn't have a very sexy name, but they're providing a really excellent education.
Well, it's a great, I mean, this is a breakthrough, although I was talking to a Chinese, young Chinese man this week, who's the representative of Axel Springer, the big German publishing house. And he was, by the way, very fluent in English. He's based now in Singapore. And when I was extolling Shanghai to him, he said, don't get carried away with Shanghai. He said, they just got a good PR department. There are other systems better than Shanghai.
You're kidding.
No.
Well, when you find them, put them on your website.
Don't worry, I will. What I want to do now, Jeff, and if any of your readers can help, I'd be very grateful. I want to see, the first bunch of these kids has now gone through college. In other words, these smart little 17-year-olds, the top 20% of the Shanghai youth population, have graduated from that system. So they've essentially graduated with a BA. That, you know, that's how far they've gotten with the, at least content work, and gone to college. And they're through now. 3 or 4 years have passed since 2009. 2009 is when we know for sure.
That was when they first passed, when they first jumped to the top of the PISA international assessment competition.
Okay, so what happened to those 2009 cohort? I want to go over there, spend a little time digging around, and find out what it was like to show up at college, what it was like for their teachers, their professors, when the first wave hit. Was it, you know, a sea change? And how did they adjust the curriculum for the fact that they were arriving really, really, really well prepared?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With a lot of momentum, you know, a lot of success under their belts, a lot of competent feeling, hey, I can do this. I could learn anything. that's how they felt. So what happened to them?
Well, I actually have a friend of mine who's an educator in Shanghai, Jason Bainbridge. In fact, I've actually interviewed him, not about education, but and he's on my China Rising Radio Sinoland WeChat group, which is a real hoot, and a lot of great conversation there. And I'll ask him about, you know, if he can meet anybody that can put us on some of the graduates. He teaches English down there, and so I'll see if Jason can maybe rustle up one or two, and so that you can interview him. What are you another thing on your article? In fact, I print this stuff out and I can't remember. Is you have a table, and I just want to cover this because every time someone talks about Chinese education, they go, well, all they do is memorize. Well, all they do is memorize. And so you have this wonderful chart here, students' self-reported use of memorization strategies. The OECD average is 21. Shanghai is 25, but the United States is 29. Canada's 26, above China. New Zealand's 35. The United Kingdom is 37. And so what's the – Australia's 35 – so what's the deal? I mean, where does this come from?
Well, I think it's a mixture of truth, because I'm sure there are many, many, many rural schools where memorization is still employed heavily, as it was, by the way, when I went to convent school as a little child, and I got beaten regularly if I didn't memorize things. And it works fine, by the way. I want to just say a word of defense for memorization. It's a very useful tool, and it's underutilized in the States. However, it's a Confucian model also. You remember that a lot of it was just committing the classics to memory.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a form of conversion. In other words, you internalize the texts, you internalize the meaning, becomes part of you when it's embedded in you. That was the whole idea of that memorization. It was to change you, to develop you morally.
Yes, exactly.
But in this case, I think it's just there are many, you know, excuses made that the Chinese are cheating, for example, on this test. And you should – I don't know if you saw it, but somewhere on that in that article, the head of the OECD responds to these charges and really does a superb job of dismissing all of them and just totally rubbishes them and says, look, wake up, people. The reason OECD runs these tests is to wake you up. You know? So, like, if you're falling behind, you'll know that you're falling behind. Well, guess what? You're falling behind, you know? Stop pointing fingers and saying they're cheating, they're memorizing, you know, just whatever. and wake up?
Right now, I'm teaching sixth grade in this international school, but it is a school licensed because of the competition for bodies. The nonprofits tend to only allow students that have a non-Chinese passport. And so there's this big rush, you know, this gold rush into private education in China now. And so schools are registering as an international school, but they are under the aegis of the Department of Education. So that at this point, they're required to teach the Chinese a national curriculum. And so I have a Chinese math teacher and I have a Chinese language teacher that I sit there and watch every day, teaching Chinese language and teaching Chinese math. And you know, there's some they memorize like a poem, you know, from, you know, somebody, an ancient poet, a beautiful poem. But basically, they're just doing what I would have done when I was growing up. They're learning the language. They mix in history and they mix in literature they even had a lesson on Chekhov and. They had a lesson on Mao Zedong pre-liberation fight for their freedom. They actually discussed a poem that Mao Zedong wrote about China's fight against imperialism. Of course, this would make, you know, the mainstream media in the West just go apoplectic. But their math, you know, the Chinese are so far ahead of the West in math. And I just watch this guy. It's just classic stuff. He puts up examples and the kids, the kids learn it. They discuss it. They repeat it. And the volume of a cylinder, you know, the area of a triangle. So, I don't find it to be any more memorization. In fact, my daughter, when she was here and going to the French Lycée, she had a lot more memorization than I think these kids do. And so it's really fascinating to watch the English language teacher and the Chinese language teacher and the math teacher, you know, teach my sixth graders as I sit in the room while they take over the class. So what's next? I mean, what do you recommend to anybody out there who is interested in education, who has children who are going to school? What do you recommend that they do?
I think the first thing to do is go to Amazon, borrow a free copy for a week of Starling's book.
I'll put a link in my article for all the fans out there, Godfrey.
Yeah, because just start, you know, informing yourself, because it's a book you can give to your local school superintendent, to your sister, to anyone. It's a very scholarly book, but it's readable and thorough, and you begin to understand that a better world is possible. A better educational world is possible because it exists, and you can go and see it.
There is there's a one quote, I still have that 15 hours per week in the classroom ringing in my ears.
Yes, that really got through to you.
well, because I did it for 2 years, and I was such a damn good teacher when I had that opportunity. I was able to be the damn good teacher that I am because I had the time to do it. I just want to read a quote from your article, which actually may be an extract from the book. But it says here. We're visiting some of the highest and lowest performing schools in China to try to uncover, quote, the secret. How is it that Shanghai's public secondary schools topped the world's charts in the 2009 PISA and again in 2015 program for international student assessment exams that measure the ability of 15-year-olds in 65 countries to apply what they've learned in math, science, and reading? After visiting Shanghai's Qiangwei Primary School with 754 students, grades 1 through 5, with 59 teachers. So that's about a 15-to-1 ratio.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It goes on. I think I found the secret. There is no secret. When you sit in on a class here and meet with the principal and teachers, what you find is a relentless focus on all the basics that we know make for high-performing schools, but that are difficult to pull off consistently across an entire school system. These are a deep commitment to teacher training, which means you have to have the time, peer-to-peer learning, which means you have to have the time, and a constant professional development, which means you have to have the time. An involvement of parents in their children's learning, an insistence by the school's leadership on the highest standards, and a culture of prize that prizes education and respects teachers. So, end of quote. So I think that's that kind of sums up what I think every parent wants for their children, and maybe a question that parents ought to be asking schools when they go and visit to see if they want their kids to go there is ask them how many hours a week are the teachers in the classroom.
Yes, because it says here the Shanghai teachers are only in for 15 hours and they're getting fabulous results. It's not that hard to turn the argument around. I mean, at home in the States, if parents are informed about what's going on, what's possible, they can get on the case, but they tend not to be informed. So I hope that, you and I talking about this might just start a ripple of information.
Well, I now have you in my favorites on Firefox under my China tab, and I wait every time for you to write an article on inpraiseofchina.com. And again, I will put that on my website for everybody, and I hope everybody also puts you on their favorites and keep tabs of your ongoing writing. and I'll continue to get my daily emails of you slicing and dicing China haters across the world who leave atrocious and ignorant comments. They make it so easy, don't they?
They do. They're a target-rich environment, you can say that.
Well, I tell you what, I think we actually had an article about the Wall Street Journal we were going to talk about, but we've already been going for a half an hour, and maybe we can just save it for and do another program in a month or so and kind of follow up on this. And have a follow-up conversation, because this has been really good, Godfrey. I really appreciated you having you on.
Okie doke. I've enjoyed it, Jeff. It's nice to be able to let off steam in person rather than in writing.
At 5 in the morning in Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Yeah, best time of day.
Hey, listen, great to talk to you, hear your voice, and meet the guy I've been reading and following for the last year. And let's stay in touch.
Okay, Jeff.
Take care, Godfrey.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.